clock's a little bit slow on the wall. But I'm looking forward to 3 o'clock.
But it will be slow before I look at it. It's like 10 to 2.
Okay, I'd like to call the Land Use Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Diller are here. Councilman Sheldon, Powers, Bell, Cartier, Smiley, Weiner, and my aide Valerie will be taking the notes. Can I have a motion on the minutes?
Motion approved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Ms. Fogarty has asked that she give a presentation at the beginning of the meeting.
Very brief.
Can I have a motion to allow Ms. Fogarty to have the presentation at the beginning?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The record reflects Council President Bullock has joined us.
Motion to thank her for the presentation. Wish her well.
Okay, Ms. Fogarty, thank you.
Oh, she's not done yet?
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's hard to express how I feel about this council. You've been...
You don't have a problem.
You've been the best council I have ever worked with. And that's... I'm not making that up, and you all know it. It's been an incredible joy to work with you. I struggled. We've reached a point where we have finally accomplished a lot of what we set out to do. And I spent last night and today in the county exec's office saying to him, it has absolutely nothing to do with the job. The job I would do for another 10 years. My husband turned 77 a couple weeks ago, and he gets angry when I say this. He said, I'm going to outlive you. I don't have life. Because I've never had a life. It's not like I had this life and was really exciting and then I came here and I put it on hold. I work, like I've always worked, 60 hours a week. I delight when I get together with each one of you, whether it's driving around with Councilman Cartier or having lunch with Councilwoman Diller or talking to each of you. And so at some point, I need, with my husband, to travel. I've never traveled, never anywhere. I didn't take time between jobs. Councilman Weiner takes a few weeks off every year. I don't even know how to do that, and I'm serious. And I gave Tom the letter. He didn't take it last night. We spent a few hours this morning, and we talked with the press right before I came here, and I gave the press a copy of the letter, but I wanted to just tell each one of you it's been... Now, I thought that this would mean I could go quietly and hide tomorrow. Well, I agreed with Tom that I would head up the search effort, and so it'll be a couple months. Hopefully, by May, I can go to Germany and... I hope, but I promised him I would. I promised him I would stay with the search.
She affects me that way.
I know. And you know all the accomplishments, and every one of those accomplishments has been with your support. I think, did George give out our... we've just finished an operational study. It's got a terrible title, Operational and Efficiency, how we're restructuring all the permitting and inspections, we're restructuring code, yada, yada. But it's all at a point now where you've got these people who are incredible. We've got the structure in place, and it can be handed off. Do I want to hand it off? No. Do I have any idea after the trips and the hiking in the Pacific Northwest what I'm going to do? No. But I promised my husband, who thinks I should stay working and leave him there, that I would market his art. That in and of itself would be a major effort. So I want to thank you. Each one of you has been incredible to me, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I have a couple of comments. Councilwoman Kilpatrick and then Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Eileen, I'm really, really sorry to hear that, and I don't want to make you cry. But I had qualms when you came as to what kind of general manager you would be, and you have exceeded every expectation that I could have had. I think you are wonderful with the public. You've been wonderful with council. You're very forthright. you understand the process, you understand what the problems are, and you always have a positive attitude in going forward and trying to accomplish what you know needs to be done. I was certainly hoping that you would stay longer than this. I understand my husband is probably going to retire this summer. I could send him with you if that would be okay. Because I don't want him home every day. But I wish you the best, and I am truly, truly happy that I have gotten to know you over the last year and a half.
Jan, I think the rumor was he filled out your paperwork for your second term. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eileen, your time with us has been a gift. And given your circumstances, we are fortunate to have had you for the time that we did. I was excited when you first came here. In fact, I knew of your reputation, had visited your cities on NACO Smart Growth Tours, and was elated to begin work with you. Now I sort of expected this, but it's still like weighs on my chest, but I'm happy for you.
And I went through my files the other day for a request from the public, and I had all my stuff that Councilman Weiner gave me before I started. So I was looking, got to see all of your stuff the other day.
May your next chapter of your life give you all the gifts and excitement to see the world that you deserve.
Thanks.
Councilwoman Diller.
Eileen, no words. It's just been great, but just remember, I know where you're from, and I can find you. And I will find you.
Councilman Smiley.
I want to say, you lasted longer than I thought.
Jeez.
Almost
really.
2 years.
I know.
And then
know.
If you add just, in the 60 hours a week, it's 3 years.
I had reservations as well, but after my initial discussion with you and our talk, you didn't seem to be type of person that would stay this long. I'm very glad that you did. We had the conversation, and I reiterate, I said that day, my goal, and I hope everyone's always is, at the end of every day, at the end of every job, you have as much respect for yourself at the end as you did when you start. And I can honestly say, I know you leave with that intact, and I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Okay, Councilman Cartier and then Councilman Bell.
I'll keep my comments very brief. I wish you all the best in retirement, and I wish you continued success in your life. And I look at your tenure with a lot of satisfaction, not only for you, but on behalf of the citizens of Newcastle County and this government. You know, we went through a period of, you know, tremendously fractious period in land use with the barley mill case and the redevelopment and the issues surrounding that and all the controversy. And I think under your leadership, I think we've done as much as you can do with the controversies of land use. I've built trust back in our citizenry along with the administration in that, you know, we have a fair and you know, good land use system, and I want to thank you for your contribution that way.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to miss our long conversations on the phone.
Right.
Sometimes for
2 hours.
2 hours. But we had a lot of very productive conversations, and I thank you for your openness, your willingness to listen, the expertise that you brought here to Newcastle County. I guess the sad part in all this is that when we start to go into a path where we think that we're heading the right way, and then we lose sort of the conductor of this. And if you take an orchestra, and when you lose that, I would only hope that this government realizes what you are attempting to do in concert with your land use team and where we should be going in the future. Because if we lose sight of that, then your efforts, okay, won't be as significant and meaningful to this county as what they should be. I think that, like I say, you were a good listener. We've got a lot of things that I think that we have in motion. I'd like to see them completed. I guess the last question I'd have for you is, are you still going to reside at 113 East 3rd Street?
Well, my husband thinks that we're independently affluent, and so that's a current discussion. We're going to...
Well, good,
we've
because
got the house in Annapolis.
You're still my constituent
we'll
if you do that.
For a while.
But no, I, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you very much for your leadership, your friendship, and wish you well in the future.
If I could just say, the vision is the county execs and your vision. It's, I'm an implementer. So the vision comes from the efforts, the CAO is here, from the administration and from all of you. All I do really, the staff is the implementer. What I am is the middle person who listens to all of you, listens to the exec, listens to the community, listens to all of the people in this room, and then I go to Anthony and Joey and MJ and George, and I could just go on through the list, and they make it happen. So you need just a person who's going to just be that little piece. The vision is here, the direction is here, and we've got an incredible organization right now.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes, your integrity and your perception of your function should be uppermost in your mind as you head up the search committee. I've been here for almost 20 years, and I've seen a lot of general managers come and go. And you're the best we've had.
Thank you. Council President.
Thank you for your stewardship, and God bless you in your future endeavors.
And like I said, one of the things on my list is to go back to the Quaker meeting and start to get active.
We have some vacancies on some boards, in case you...
After the first month of the trips and the art, and I'm probably going to be outside George's and MJ's window. Thank you.
Well, your expertise and knowledge is certainly going to be hard to replace, and something that we've grown to draw a lot of benefit from in this county. So without going on and on, just simply thank you.
Thank you, and thank these guys, too. Thank you so much.
Okay, first item on the agenda. Ordinance 14072 under the sponsorship of Councilman Retta. Councilman Retta is not able to be here today. His aide has a few opening comments for us.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Retta, unfortunately, was unable to be here this afternoon. The purpose of the ordinance 14072 is to rezone the property to CN and develop a shopping center. It does meet the recommendations from the Land Use Department with some conditional approvals. With the, also with the Planning Board, the applicant has held meetings with the surrounding communities with no objections, and I'm happy to turn the floor over to the applicant. He is here.
Also, a little record, Councilman Street did notice that he would not be able to make the meeting also. So the department's up here. We'll go with him.
Okay. Anthony Sikowski with Land Use Department. I'll just provide a very brief overview and turn it over to the applicant.
Okay.
As read into the record, this is a proposed rezoning, 22 acres. It's located on the east side of St. Christiana Road, 47. It's directly south of, it's called Honeysuckle Lane, and across the street from the Delaware Park Telegraph Road. It's, change the slide here. Here's an aerial view of the property. The site, most of the, you can see the stream along the southerly side of the property, and to the east is mostly wetlands, floodplain area. There's a small buildable area closer to the north easterly corner of the site up next to the Walgreens. So the proposal is to rezone the property, which is current zoning, is S to CN. The site will be developed. It'll still have approximately 95% open space overall on this parcel. One distinction from the notice that went out or on the agenda is that the proposal has actually been reduced to 11,400 square feet. It's as advertised, I think it was 17,800. the wetland floodplain areas and repairing buffers that have the 100% protection level will be located within a conservation easement. This shows existing zoning districts for the area. The light green is suburban. As you can see, just south of the property is industrially zoned. We have CN property to the north, and then the golf course directly to the west is the CR zoning. There's some existing small pockets of NC, I think mostly 6.5 for showing existing residential development. This is a proposed site plan by the applicant. I've been working with the department's been working with the applicant to try to provide some improvements to the site, including cul-de-sac type turnaround with some landscaping. The one thing this plan does not reflect is to the southwest or to the left side of this picture, some existing forested areas, which the applicant will maintain for the most part. So this does not reflect that. We're trying to maintain as much as the vegetative areas out there as possible. Additionally, there's loading areas on the right side of the building and some trash receptacles, which have been pushed further from the building. And those areas will be screened also. So architectural rendition of the building. We've been in discussion with the applicant about some changes to the actual elevation of the building, including awnings, additional glass along the front edge. The awnings wrap around the sides of both sides of the building with sidewalks and glass around both sides of the building. The signage is also specific to having instead of a box style types of signs. They will continue to use a shared, or they will propose to use a shared driveway with the pharmacy. I think it's the Walgreens pharmacy there opposite Telegraph Road. The level of service is accessible with the 11,400 square foot retail center, and it's also located in the state strategies investment too, which is anticipated for growth. The standard for the zoning map amendment. Both the Land Use Department and Planning Board recommendation both recommended conditional approval of this plan, provided that the parking layout included a cul-de-sac type turnaround. Previously, it had a hammerhead type dead-end parking area. Incorporate facade elements, which have been done, including the wraparound awnings, windows, signage, and then screening of the loading and dumpster areas. And then the last thing was the minimization of the tree clearing, which also has been incorporated in the last plan version.
You're ahead of your time.
That's all I have for this time.
It was pretty thorough. Councilman Wyden?
Thank you. Can you describe the internal and external bike ped improvements?
Sure. So it's currently sidewalk along the front edge that goes heads kind of southwest toward the stream area. I'm not sure if they crossed over the old bridge that was there also, but and then there's a bus stop. Just you can see the shared drive for the Walgreens that's there. There's an actual bus stop located on the Walgreens parcel, so there'll be an opportunity for pedestrians to utilize that bus stop to frequent this facility.
And you mentioned that the proposal, once built, will operate within acceptable levels of service. Can you just comment on what the level of service prescribed for that area is?
For this area, well, it would be level service D. It would maintain at least maintain D for the site. So it either currently operates at C or D.
And after construction, would it, or currently, do any of the turning movements have a LOS worse than D?
Not within the area of influence, but I can get back to you on if there are other areas or intersections within proximity of the site that have that. But the due to the size of the store, the 11,400 square foot, they contribute less than 1% of the traffic of the intersections.
So this would be more passed by traffic than designation, than
likely,
designated trips.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sure.
Additional questions for the department before we get to the applicant? Seeing none?
Yeah,
I'm not sure if there's anything to add, but does the applicant want to
risk it?
Chairman, your advice is always sound. I think there may be somebody here from the public, and depending on some questions, I may be, you know, be happy to respond to them. I did want to say, for the record, though, obviously, I also very disappointed to hear about our general manager's departure. And I have to admit, for one time, I agree with Councilman Weiner. I think she was the best general manager we ever had. And I think
you've seen quite a few as well.
Including himself.
I'm sorry to see her go.
Oh, that's right. Only you were doing
that. It's all with love. But I actually agree. And I agree for a couple of reasons, but I'll just briefly say that I think Eileen always, in my interactions with her, demonstrated two important characteristics that for my viewshed of the world, and that is professionalism and integrity. And everything, all my interactions with her, I can say that about her. And I think she always had a sense of doing justice, you know, code compliance, but also justice, what is fair, what is reasonable. And she's gonna be sorely missed. So thank you for your service, Eileen. And I think that those sentiments were universally thought of you from anybody who's interacted with you. And I think Larry would probably agree as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And I hope you're not applying for the job because you just... Okay, additional questions from members of council? Nothing? Okay, the public. Anybody from the public? Yes.
Hi, my name is Donnie Shankey. I'm with Rutherford Civic Association. I did not necessarily come here today for this, but I do travel that direction quite a bit. And I have no objections to the project as it is. What I would like to see, though, and you had talked about bike paths and everything else, you know, is I have seen people standing there in the rain waiting for a bus. If there was any way to have a covered bus shelter for them to stand under rather than to stand in the rain and wait for a bus, I would appreciate that possibility. As you all know, that I don't think there's anything that can be done to salvage that intersection and the subsequent intersection at Limestone Road and 7. It's a disaster every day when you go back. When you're trying to go up Limestone Road that direction, you're always in bumper and bumper traffic. And I don't know personally of any options, but again, the big issue is if someone could provide a enclosed shelter for bus transportation, I think that would make a big difference. And I suggest not crossing that intersection by foot.
Thank you. Additional questions for members of the public? Okay, seeing none. Oh, you didn't put your hand up. You looked like you wanted to, but you didn't.
I'm just delivering traffic for the MLCA, and I wasn't sure whether this is the appropriate time.
It's on this application on the rezoning?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And
Ms. Whitehead, are you going to summarize this or just for us to read in our leisure? Okay, all right, thank you. Questions from members of council? Councilman Carrier?
Yeah, point of clarification. This is the rezoning going from S to CN. What we just received, CR. CR is commercial regional. This is going to be a commercial neighborhood shopping center. Just to clarify that, Mr. Chairman.
So. Okay. Well, she already confirmed that she was just the deliverer. Yeah, so. Okay. Councilman Smiley?
I'll just go on record that I'll take this under consideration when that plan gets in front of me.
Okay. All right, next on the agenda, an update on the UDC to council. GM Fogarty, was there?
Yes, I hope everyone in the room got, all of you got an invitation to the community meeting next Thursday night at 7 o'clock, Christiana Fire Hall. The topics are going to be we'll have the consultants, Clarion and Mark White. We will be talking about what we've heard for this whole past more than a year. Neighborhood conservation districts, economic development districts, and what are the principles that we're going to put in place to guide the UDC.
We also will be doing focus groups on Wednesday and Thursday, and we only started today to call on those. We would love it if you all would pick one to attend or two. The topics will be transportation. We'll have one with business and developers, land use attorneys. We will have one with agriculture and the environment. We'll have one with the civic representatives. George, what have I missed? The architects and engineers.
Architects and engineers.
The nonprofits.
And institutional.
And I said a transportation one. So I will. My office will be calling you in the next day or so to see if we can get you each to attend one of those. If it works out, that would be great. And again, the meeting next Thursday night, we send out to everybody. If you have others you know of, please forward or have us forward and invite to them.
Mr. GM Fogarty, you did notice us on that. Was there, I mean, did that have in that email the agenda for that night?
It mentioned that the agenda will be presentation, and it will be presentation on what we've heard on these three topics, and then it'll be work session on the three topics, and then we'll be all coming back together to hear, make sure that everything we've heard over the last several months is current.
Okay.
And then the other piece of information, George, do I have these?
Oh,
what I do with that bag with all the reports.
I don't think so.
MJ, did I leave it in your car?
Probably packed it up already.
Okay, here it is. This is it. We finished, and this is definitely bedtime reading when you're almost asleep and not completely asleep. This is seriously.
Not another piece.
We finished what we call operational efficiency and implementation plan. What it's about are our permitting, licensing, and inspection functions. We restructured the management. We have a new licensing manager. Joey Roberto is acting, and we are putting a couple of other positions in place right now. But if you want to, if you want to go to sleep, but if you somehow are really focused on what are the details of what we need to do to change permitting, processing, and enforcement, here's your study. Thanks. We've finished a fee study, which the county exec has, and he will be sharing that in his budget presentation, and we will be delivering a copy to you as soon as he's shared it.
Just a quick question. You put that back in your bag, so if you're not coming home with us, maybe we can... There we go. All right.
Thank you.
Can I get a signed copy, please?
Oh, this one will really put you to sleep.
All right, great. Well, thank you for that presentation. Next on the agenda is the discussion on deed restrictions. I think... always an indication when you bring the attorney, we're going to have a problem.
A what?
Hello.
Good afternoon, council members. Mary Jacobson, Office of Law. I attended the meeting, Land Use Committee meeting last week, and heard a couple of your questions concerning deed restrictions. So I put together a brief overview that I'll skim over today. We can certainly get in more detail. I think some of you may have specific questions at the end of the presentation. I can certainly try to address those. So let me pass this out to start. And again, this is just an overview of what I'm going to discuss today. Double-sided.
I did,
I
double-sided.
That's a good
thing. I want to cut down more trees because it might add some value to them. ain't worth nothing. $500 an acre every 20, 40 years.
I think one of the questions I get the most as representing the land use department are questions resulting from deed restrictions. And I want to give you a general overview quickly about deed restrictions that might be covering some of the information you already know. But generally, courts disfavor any restrictions that are placed on private property. The courts view private property rights as a protected right, therefore to restrict those or to limit those private property rights, the courts will look at those with very careful interpretations. So a deed restriction has to be crafted very carefully, and it has to be clear on the face of the deed restriction what the intent of the deed restriction is. There are several ways to create a deed restriction, by contract. And I think most of the calls we get from council members concerning private deed restrictions are the ones that are created by deed restrictions that are followed by developers prior to conveyance of the lots in the neighborhood. And those would be under item number, Roman numeral I, number one, deed restrictions created by contract. Now, in order for those deed restrictions to be effective, the restriction has to touch and concern the land. There has to be an intent on the covenanting parties to create the restrictions. And there has to be actual constructive notice of the restriction to the people purchasing the property. Typically, as I said, these are the restrictions that encumber new subdivisions. Enforcement is usually delineated in the set of deed restrictions. It'll spell out the developer has a right to enforce for a certain amount of time. Other than that, anybody that is burdened by the restrictions or benefited by, really anybody benefited by the restrictions will have a right to enforce, so any homeowner. You also very likely will see rights of assignment in these, so a civic group or a maintenance corporation or a homeowner association has the right to enforce on behalf of the community. Enforcing these, there has to be, the person enforcing them has the burden to show that there is a deed restriction, there's been a violation of the restriction. There was a couple questions last week about what happens if a community doesn't enforce a particular restriction, what happens to that restriction. And the rule of abandonment is such that if there's an entity charged with enforcement of a deed restriction, fails to enforce it, it is quite possible that any future enforcement of the same type of restriction will not be upheld by a court. Now, that is limited to that specific restriction. So if we're not enforcing sheds and 90% of the neighborhood has sheds and the 91st shed comes in, the community will be hard-pressed to say we're not allowing sheds at that point. So there has to be a pretty clear and consistent resistance from enforcing that particular restriction. The rest of the restrictions will continue until they're enforced. It's also possible that, I think in a lot of the deed restrictions that are being developed by attorneys, there will be a standard clause that says failure to enforce does not constitute waiver. So in that case, if there's actual language that says that, the communities will notice that just because there might be five sheds doesn't mean we're going to allow the sixth. And under Delaware law, that is permissible if the deed restrictions contain non-waiver language. There's another theory that can diminish the effectiveness of deed restrictions is a changed circumstance doctrine. That's if over the years a community has changed so much or the surrounding area around the community has changed so much that the deed restrictions really don't achieve the purpose that they were intended. This is a pretty tough doctrine to prove. And typically, it's like if a residential area kind of starts sliding towards commercial or sliding towards industrial. So it has a lot to do more with the surrounding than just the community itself. Another way to create deed restrictions, private deed restrictions, is through the common plan doctrine. In this case, there doesn't actually have to be constructive notice of or actual notice of the existence of a deed restriction. So if you bring in a subdivision plan, all the lots are shown in a certain configuration. There's restrictions on those lots. If the deed restriction doesn't make it into a few of the lots, the court will impose the deed restriction on those lots, even though they might not have had constructual actual notice. And that's a common plan theory. And we get that a lot. We've actually, I had litigation this year where a developer was trying to change lots and reconfigure open space, but under the common plan theory, any of those property owners could have come forward and said, wait a minute, I bought in reliance on this record plan and this is what I was promised. But in that case, the county actually stepped forward on the common plan theory and said, this was a common plan of development. You can't come in and start changing it like this without getting 100% of the approval of the homeowners. So that does come into play quite frequently, even if there is a lack of a deed restriction. You'll see that in a lot of the older communities in Brandywine 100. Interesting with the common plan doctrine, any person that lives in that neighborhood can enforce a common plan restriction at any time. So the fact that there was an abandonment, there's really not an abandonment argument because everybody has a right to that. So if at any point in time, any individual can come forward and pursue a common plan. And I guess the one thing I didn't see, that when Sedgley Farms was coming in here with a lot of applications to split different lots and just separate, subdivide the lots, I was actually a little bit surprised that one of those neighbors that they were objecting to those, and they objected at different levels of government. What I think one of them could have brought, or they missed the opportunity to bring, is a common plan theory to block the subdivision of those lots. So that was actually in the litigation I have with common plan theory, the opposing council brought that up, that wasn't brought up and therefore doesn't exist in other places where we allow subdivisions. So it's an interesting theory that often can be brought forward to stop things like subdivision or enforcement of deed restrictions. That's just a brief overview of private deed restrictions. In section two, I want to talk about why the county cannot enforce private deed restrictions. The county's grant of power is specifically limited in Title IX of the Delaware Code. That power specifically does not include the power to enact private or civil law concerning civil relationships. That's essentially what a private deed restriction is. It's a private contract between owners of that property. The reason the county, and this has also been reinforced by court cases, and the reason the county cannot enforce private deed restrictions is what it really amounts to is unlawful delegation of power up to private individuals to create private restrictions to be enforced by the county's police powers. So it kind of takes the county's police powers and puts those in the hands of the private individuals and then turns around and tries to make the county act on behalf of those private individuals. So it's clearly a problem when a private community or individuals try to get the county to enforce private deed restrictions. The UDC was, when we adopted the UDC, it was made very clear that in 40-20-410 that the county will not enforce private deed restrictions. And there's actually been litigation, court cases, back when we were early when we were adopting the UDC, where we would not hear a Board of Adjustment application, where we would not issue a building permit because it violated a private deed restriction. And the court has actually held, county, you can't do that. You can't do that. Issuance of our Board of Adjustment variances or issuance of building permits is strictly controlled by county law, either contained in the UDC or county deed restrictions to which the county is a party. Which brings us to deed restrictions that the county is a party to. Importantly, all notations on a record plan are considered restrictive covenants and are treated as such. So they run with the land against the owners of the record plan and any future owner of that land. Importantly, there's also language in the code that says we have the exclusive right to enforce those notes on the record plan and notations on the record plan. There's other ways that we can also create deed restrictions. Council, I'm sure, is familiar with many of those ways, but I think most obvious is when somebody comes in, developer comes in for rezoning, and they'll make certain representations to either the community or the council or to the department in order to make the plan more palatable. And a good case with looking at that is in the Pike Creek case, there are two agreements in 1964 and 1968, which the levy court IE County Council was a party to, and then they were again incorporated on a master plan. So Pike Creek is controlled. I'm sure you're all familiar with that because we've been in litigation forever over those deed restrictions. So that's one set of deed restrictions. Brandywine Town Center is a good example of deed restrictions too. There's a very comprehensive set of deed restrictions for Brandywine Town Center that controls percentage of square footage and open space requirements, and these go above and beyond what the code requires, and it's what the developer is putting out there. There's miscellaneous documents also that we look at that constitute deed restrictions, or maintenance declarations, TDR requirements where something has to be reported to track those, conservation easements where we're reserving a land or saying you can't develop on a portion of land because of conservation reasons. So there's various ways the county becomes a party to restrict the covenants. To modify and terminate those restrictions, of course, that's delineated in the UDC in 31. You've seen many applications, so I won't go over that in detail. But another way you can modify or terminate a deed restriction is through equitable estoppel. And that's kind of the argument where, I guess with private deed restrictions, we'd argue there was an abandonment or a waiver. With the county, where we see most challenges would be the county's stopped from enforcing a deed restriction because we failed to, or we took some type of action that indicated we weren't going to enforce it. And I think the biggest case that comes to mind with that I can remember is the DiSabatino case, where he had a note on the record plan that said no further subdivision, and then he came in and he ended up getting a building permit, and we processed a building permit, and then we kind of caught it later in the game saying, wait a minute, you can't do it because you can't subdivide the lot, and the court said too late. You went far enough and let him go far enough without stopping him. So the county and the department really have to pay attention to what we're doing in order to make sure that any restrictions to which the county is a party of aren't subject to any attacks of equitable estoppel.
Questions, members of council? Councilmember Moynihan.
Thank you. I want to thank council for the land use department for providing us a good overview. I just had some additional points that I wanted to bring up, and I asked council to let me know if there's a disagreement, but these are some of the things that I thought might be supplemented to what you had to say. The issue of standing, of course, the court makes decisions as to who is standing, and it's a preliminary issue or threshold issue that has to be determined. Typically, if the party is named, i.e. the county or another party, then they have standing. But a lot of times the court will determine that anyone in the community who benefits by the deed restrictions would have standing. I only mention that because it's another issue that we all have to deal with as we go. All of us have to go through. Enforceability, we all hear this as well. If one of the clauses, this goes different issue that you talked about enforceability, the typical clause that says non-enforcement will not be a waiver, so that if you do have four sheds and there's a fifth shed built, then that means the community can still go ahead as long as they're going against all five sheds in that example. But another enforceability aspect of a deed restrictions is if one clause, let's say, is held to be unenforceable because it hasn't been enforced or it's against public policy, that doesn't mean that the other clauses in the deed restriction still aren't effective. In other words, it doesn't negate the whole document. In terms of deed restrictions themselves, the courts have often said that they're akin to private contracts, so that government doesn't choose sides as between parties, because who are we to say which side is right or wrong? That's for the court to determine. Public policy. Obviously, the community doesn't want to spend its own money, so they're going to try to find ways to get us to get involved to enforce it. But we have to understand, because we're all officers of this government, that there's good public policy why we don't want to get involved and pick sides. So even though we'd love to save, you know, our good friends, the civic leaders, from having to spend money from their treasury or their own selves, their own houses, we have to be cautious about that. Community can request additional deed restrictions. This is something that I know Larry Tarabicos and Sean Tucker and others, all of us have heard. A lot of times the community doesn't actually understand that it could negotiate in its own best interests additional deed restrictions beyond which the county might be requesting in the form of a note. Now, one time this county used to use deed restrictions, and then it really moved away to notes on the plan. But I have one query because it comes specifically from the Barley Mill experience that is scarred upon me, and that is that there was a note on the plan, and the note said a 40-foot height restriction. Now, obviously, when Stoltz bought the land from DuPont, according to the previous land use general manager, the successor owner can remove notes from the plan. So in that sense, query, are they really in the same nature as a deed restriction? To me, it's still an open question because I never did get a straight answer from the previous land use general manager. He gave me an answer saying that the note can be removed. I never accepted that. I think he was wrong. But then again, you know, he had the advice of the county attorney and he so proceeded accordingly. That issue never got before the Supreme Court, but I think if it had, the Supreme Court might have had an opinion on that.
Councilor McCarty?
Just a comment.
And then Councilwoman Capone.
Two comments. Number one, to fill in this very excellent legal description of deed restrictions. Of course, deed restrictions that violate federal law, i.e. especially pertaining to race, religion, gender, and all that, are by their nature illegal. I had a house with a deed and a deed restriction regarding race, so those are now struck out. Am I correct?
No, that's definitely correct. You still see some. I always am kind of shocked when I come across an old deed restriction where I see that language. It's very offensive language, but you know, they're still out there, but they're unenforceable as against public policy. But you know, I think there's one interesting aspect about deed restrictions. The government has to comply with the United States Constitution. So when we do deed restrictions, we have to be careful about like First Amendment. When private parties enact deed restrictions, they don't necessarily have to worry about First Amendment or other constitutional issues. So there can be very restrictive sign regulations for communities. I think that's the one that jumps to my mind. So a community can regulate signage more strictly than, say, a government can regulate signage. So it's important to know the difference on what the government can regulate and what the community can regulate, which I think brings up a really good point is, I think both Councilman Tackett, you and both Councilwoman Kilpatrick had a really interesting question about, can a community restrict parking in a right-of-way? I spent hours researching that question, and I can tell you I didn't find an answer. But what I found was provisions in the Delaware Code that say once Delaware accepts a roadway, a highway, or a roadway into their system, that they have complete control over and control responsibility and maintenance over that roadway. So to me, statutorily, the word control would mean control over who can park there and when they can park there. Yeah, I think another important factor, or I would look at when looking at this issue, is a dedication of a road is made it's made upon record plan approval. So when the plan comes to council approves a plan, that dedication is complete. Now, acceptance isn't complete, but the dedication is complete. So deed restrictions typically come on after, say, record plan or during record plan time. So once a developer says, I'm dedicating this, or delineates areas on the plan that are going to be dedicated, and I think there's a good argument to say that dedication is free and clear of any deed restrictions that would encumber the lot. I don't have an opinion from DelDOT on that. I'd be curious to get their opinion on DelDOT, but ultimately that is a question to be answered by council for DelDOT. But just looking around and poking around with that issue, that's kind of where I would come. It's not a legal opinion, that is my personal opinion, just poking around, looking at the statutes and knowing a little bit about record plans.
Follow-up question or another question?
I just want to follow up. My follow-up comment is,
Councilor McCarty.
There's a lot of there's a lot of plans out there that county is control deed restrictions. And I've got one in my district that's eventually going to come in front of folks here, and strap your seatbelts in for that one. It's not going to be a fun one.
Councilman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Mary, you kind of touched on what Dave and I had asked about last time. I guess part of my question would be, since we're seeing this same phrase in a variety of different deed restrictions in different parts of the county, is there a standard deed restriction that developers are using, and should we maybe have that re-looked at? I mean, to say you can't park on the street after midnight when it's a dedicated street taken into the DelDOT maintenance system, they have no control over that deed restriction. So if she parked on the street and I was a president of the maintenance association and said, you know, no, you can't, and I'm going to take you to court, I'm going to presume that I'm going to lose, because I don't even see how that's civilly enforceable when we're talking about a public entity. Yeah, are you getting what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, but I would hesitate to comment on any private deed restrictions unless they were a violation of county law. So to look at any issue that could be a DelDOT or state issue or a right-of-way issue, I don't think that the county has jurisdiction to say, hey, developers, can you look at this clause, or is this clause legal? So, I mean, I hesitate to comment on that. I don't know. I know that Larry's here. He's probably done more deed restrictions than anybody in the room. But, you know, I'd be curious to know his opinion about the whole parking in the right-of-way and if you can restrict it.
If permitted.
Just state your name.
Larry Terabicos. I think we looked at that once before, too, and because it's state land, because it's dedicated right-of-way, it's very difficult to restrict it, because it isn't, it's not private property. You can't restrict private property, public property rather. But I just think there's an important distinction between the deed restrictions that developers propose as part of projects and deed restrictions that are part of, that are community deed restrictions.
But these
there's
are deed,
a big difference.
These are deed restrictions that are coming over from initially from the developer, you know, are attached
yes.
to the deed. So my question is, should the developers be looking at what they're actually putting on to these deed restrictions? You know, I mean, somebody at some point wrote some deed restrictions, and that's kind of the format. And
unfortunately, that's true.
And everybody just, you know, piles on. Well, if I wrote that deed restriction for a community initially that had private roads, that's very different than writing for one that has state-maintained roads. And maybe some of this needs to go back on the development community to say, how about if you look at these and figure out if this is even enforceable? I mean, I know we enforce them on a civic level if they're not backed up by county code for things like you can't have figurines in your front yard and that kind of thing. But this isn't enforceable. I don't see that this is enforceable by anybody.
Right. No, it's not. It's just something that people typically want. And you're right, there are the typical residential deed restrictions that are in most subdivisions have become copied over the years by most attorneys in town. There's some slight variations I've seen, but most of them are very similar. And I think it's desirable to have that language in there if you don't want people parking in the right-of-way, though you can enforce it.
But see, this is causing problems in some communities. I mean, obviously he has a community that is their Bible, and they enforce every leaf that's out of place on somebody else's property. So this one is making them crazy because they now have something that they want to enforce and they can't.
Have they tried? Like, I'd be interested
to
see.
No, I see. I think the community.
I'd like to see how a court reacts on that.
Well, I told them to
talk to DelDOT. No, I don't think the county can, because they. I think the community maintenance corporation can enforce it, because everybody who bought in there bought under the understanding that those restrictions were there. So the state isn't going to tell them not to park there, and the county can't enforce that. But the community maintenance corporation can, because they have the ability to enforce their rules. They can enforce their rules on each homeowner, so they can enforce it. Their role.
And that's interesting. If a court would view it as a deed restriction, would you view it like you have a clubhouse and you have certain restrictions on a clubhouse? So you can, this is what time it's going to open, and this is what we want done at the clubhouse. Or you have to, and you, that's not a deed restriction. So I don't know.
But it's private to private.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just curious if court would say, you know, these are restrictions they have. Maybe it doesn't constitute a deed restriction, but it's still a restriction you have to comply with because you live in that neighborhood. So it might not rise to the level of a deed restriction, but it could rise to a rule or regulation that they're expected to comply with. I'd be interested to see how a court rules. It really would.
I have Councilman Smiley, Councilman Weiner, and the
First off, Mr. Turner, because it's going to be a very tough sell to convince a judge that the person received a copy of the maintenance of the deed restrictions, because the majority of realtors don't pass them off. As a matter of fact, I uncovered a situation down in Bear where because the builder was still building, so the maintenance corporation had not been officially recognized. The realtors that were selling, where people were reselling homes, were advising them to mark the box. There was no community organization that they had to join because it had not yet been recognized. And I uncovered that because I was looking with someone in the house and picked up the thing off the counter, and I got a hold of the board of realtors. But they play that game as well. I will say I did have a situation where, same situation in two different communities. One, they had a vehicle towed off the street because the deed restrictions said they couldn't park there. Well, as it turned out, because it's only one road coming in and it's a townhouse community, turned out it was private because DelDOT won't take it. They declare it a driveway. But I had it happen in another community where they, because I look at it this way too, their deed restrictions, then the county police should not be going out ticketing or citing the vehicle. So it's strictly a community. They got into that, they actually had the vehicle towed. The individual contacted their attorney. They ended up settling, but that maintenance corporation ended up paying for the towing fees, damage that the car got while it was towed and everything else. They decided they didn't want to take it to court and argue it. And again, I've got communities, older communities, about in immobile objects in the street. That comes to the pods and the trash containers. They're in the street. Contact DelDOT. DelDOT will tell you. We have no rules against the time they could be there or where they could be, as long as they don't violate the corner and you're stuck with them. So I don't see a car being any different.
No, I think it is the community. And to your point, I don't want to get, overly technical, but when you take title to your home, I mean, not to offend anybody, but I would never expect any of the realtors to give you any of that stuff. But the closing attorney is supposed to give them all to you. Mm-hmm. And more importantly than that is it doesn't matter because they're recorded. And so when you get your deed, whether it references it in the deed or not, they're on record, and under Delaware law, you have constructive notice. You are on notice the minute you take title to your property that those restrictions are on your property, whether you were handed a copy or not.
And I agree, but bottom line is you create animosity and a problem between neighbors.
Absolutely.
And the bottom line is it goes back to, because realtors and attorneys don't want to do their job, because as you know, as homes change hands, that where it said there were deed restrictions now says item 7 of subsection this is now applicable. Well, they're at the table, they've already signed everything, and now they have it, and now they're not going to go searching for it.
No, it's a concern on new homes and definitely on resales.
But I'll go back to what I said the last time we discussed this, and again, I had conversations with the land use department on it. We don't have the authority to enforce it, but the developers and your new developments, before the maintenance corporation is codified, before everything is turned over to them, they should do a due diligence walkthrough in that community, remove whatever is in the deed restrictions that's not relevant, and they also should be forced to require those homeowners that are in violation of them to fix the violation or remove it. Instead, you get turned over to the maintenance corporation. Right out of the chute, the maintenance corporation has to deal with the sheds that are the wrong color, the basketball hoops that don't belong there, and everything else that the developer let be in violation for months while they were building the community.
I tell you, I'm just sitting here thinking out loud, and one thing you could do is you could consider an ordinance that, when this will catch people's attention, that would say that if you that the recorder of deeds cannot accept a deed for recording if it does not reference all the deed restrictions, and if the community has deed restrictions, that there actually has to be a one-page summary saying what they are, so that at settlement, when the buyer is being told by the attorney, here's your deed, and by the way, then they have, because I can tell you, most of the attorneys who do residential settlements, they don't even look at the title search. Their paralegal looks at it, and they don't read anything. They hand them the papers, because they're only charging $400, and so they're not reading anything. There's a couple that do, but not many. And so I now would force them to have to look at it before they prepare the deed. Otherwise, recorder deeds reject the deed. That's one I can think, I can tell you, no settlement attorney wants their deed being rejected, because they're signing the title insurance policy and their malpractice insurance is requiring, they make sure that deed gets recorded on the day of settlement. So I think you could consider an ordinance that would say, you know what, the recorder deed will no longer accept the deed unless it references deed restrictions that are applicable in the community. And if there are deed restrictions, that you attach a one-page summary of what those restrictions are. And now you're telling the people, now they're seeing it at every single settlement. That's an idea. I'm just sitting here today off the top of my head.
I like that.
Councilman Weiner.
Well, thank you. A lot of good points discussed. I just thought of a few other items that I wanted to share. One of which is that it's axiomatic that take your property as a matter of subject to law with all liens and miscellaneous documents of record, which means that even if the lawyer failed to mention or reference a miscellaneous deed in the line of title, if it's in the line of title, you take subject to it. I worked as a title searcher for a year and a half. I was working my way through school, and it's just one of the things that we learned.
Now we know where it all started.
And doing title as well. Another one of the things that we learned was, and this is supplementing what our good attorney just told us, is there's state red letter law that says that once roads are dedicated to public use, that the State Department of Transportation has, quote, sole and exclusive jurisdiction. Now, the county is a creature of state creation. That means that nothing the county can do can undo the fact that the State Department of Transportation in the state has sole and exclusive jurisdiction over all dedicated roads and their appurtenances. Now, what does that also mean? That the DLDOT right-of-way, the drainage into the public right-of-way, and the sidewalks. And so we now have a vacuum, speaking of jurisdiction, when it comes to sidewalks, because the State Department of Transportation has said very clearly, until recently, they modified it, we own the sidewalks, we built them, we're responsible for them, we're not going to maintain them because we can't afford it. Now, having said that, recently, the state, because Newcastle County legislators complained, began to shovel certain sidewalks within parameters of schools. But they own them. And so when the county says, well, we're not going to do it because we don't know the roads, the communities come to us all the time and they say, why don't we require it? We can't. And there's even a case in the city of Wilmington, which certainly can be argued to be applicable in the county, that said the city of Wilmington had promulgated a law within their jurisdiction, their home rule, that sidewalks had to be plowed by the homeowner. Supreme Court said, no, no, no. It's owned by the city of Wilmington, which got that jurisdiction over it from the state. Therefore, the citizen who lives there doesn't have responsibility. Well, now there's this no man's land in city law as well, which could be applicable to the county, saying the city's not going to do it, the state's not going to do it. There's nobody really responsible if, say, you trip and fall on a sidewalk in the city or all the county. Now, my good friend Bob Valahora, when he was a state legislator, tried to get then county executive Tom Gordon to have the county take over liability, i.e. responsibility, financial responsibility for the sidewalks. Tom Gordon previously, county executive, said we want nothing to do with it. But Bob, as an attorney, recognized that there is really a big hole in the law, and it hasn't yet been filled.
Councilman Powers?
Yes. Kind of what Larry said, and it really is what I'm finding in my maintenance corps is it's usually the first time, but it never comes later. So most people did not even know they have a maintenance agreement. What was said about public, you know, you need to find out if that road is the state's or not. I have a subdivision that had parking, and because of the problems, they put concrete barriers and they don't let anybody in there anymore. And it also goes back on the liability on their it's totally there. You can't park there anymore. It's one of my biggest maintenance corps.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
Thank you. I just wanted to tag on to the sidewalk issue a little bit, and I know that's not exactly what we're on, but the county also had a case, and I think it was in Brookside many years ago, and the resolution was pretty much the same as it was in the city of Wilmington. Prior to that, Newcastle County was the enforcement for it. DelDOT was never the enforcement, and beyond that point, nobody appealed, but the county said, we are no longer doing enforcement. So it is, again, in no man's land.
And I don't know, maybe this new office in the AG's office, the ombudsman, you know, supposedly created the work we did. Maybe this will be something they undertake to look at these. Because my problem with deed restrictions have been just what we've heard here, that there's a lot of stuff just thrown in them that doesn't have any consideration on enforcement. I have some that say, you know, you can have three cats or something. I don't know what it was. But how are you going to enforce that? You know, you're going to be out trying to go to court and, you know, you're... And then I have one that said that the Civic Association or the Maintenance Corporation couldn't use any of their monies to actually take anybody to court on it. I mean, and I know they're older, but there still needs to be some uniform document out there that somebody can see and the communities can get and they can use when they have to do the enforcement, when they end up having to go to court, you know, to have something that's actually enforceable. No bird bath in the front yard or no clotheslines, no basketball hoop. I mean, some of the stuff. And I've got some that didn't even allow for... they said you had to have only wood split rail fences. You know, I mean,
they're still building
that. They still have.
Councilman Powers,
and the fencing has green bond.
You know, that's the difference. If you look at the, you know, how they evolved, and you know the area that you and I, what I used to have, you read those agreements, and a lot of them are one page. Now go to Endesa National and have fun reading that thing. But. You know, some of them were real simple, and you know the main. You're saying the money. My better run maintenance corps spend probably $25,000 to $50,000 a year maintaining their deed restrictions and collecting money. But it's part of their budget, and they're the best run ones. That the ones have attorneys right on there that are doing this stuff.
Yep.
So the one that isn't doing it and not spending the money is going to go to hell because they're going to build whatever the hell they want and got nothing going on. Just what she said. I didn't learn anything here. I knew exactly all of this. Go read Odessa Nationals. You'll figure it out.
It's very true what Councilman Powers is saying, because you can look at a lot of in Janet Kilpatrick districts. You can see the difference between the communities that are well-maintained. It's interesting. Working on a project right now, it's going to come before you soon, that I worked on with Councilman Smiley and Councilman Retta down Route 7, Newtown Square. But there's a project right next door, and the community worked very closely with us, the Crossings at Christiana. Their community was built by Benchmark Builders 15, 20 years ago, and it looks exactly the same as it did when it was built. It's maintained in a pristine condition. The clubhouse is in fantastic condition, but it's an age-restricted community, and the people there are so fastidious and obsessed with maintaining. In all the age-restricted communities, all of the ones that I did with Benchmark Builders over the years, you can now go back 15 years later and they look great. But every other community, I again don't want to insult anyone, but sadly down there, Crofton, Newtown Village, if you go down there, they're a mess, and they're not even as old as Crossings in Christiana. But it has a lot to do with, do you get well organized? Do you fund the maintenance corporation, and do you manage it correctly and then maintain the integrity and the appearance of your community? It does make a huge difference. I mean, what Councilman Powers is saying is so true.
Well, sometimes, just like Councilman Smiley referenced, it's getting to that point where you have a community that hasn't, and we've seen this because of the economy, it's taken a long time and they've drug out and nobody enforced the deed restrictions. Now you're turning them over to a community and saying, here you go, but they're proliferated with, you know, violations already. How do you get your arms around that?
Well, you can't.
Blind. So, okay, no additional questions. Anybody from the public?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hi.
This is on deed restrictions?
Oh, yeah.
Huh? On deed restrictions?
No, this is for something.
Oh, yeah, they're waiting until we get a public comment? Okay. Okay, anybody have anything under other? Nothing? Okay, public comment.
All right. Hi, my name is Jason Hoover. I'm the founder, I'm a Wilmington native, and I'm the founder of an organization called Save the Valley, where our mission is to protect and preserve the land in Beaver Valley. It's in North Wilmington. It's the largest piece of contiguous open space in the county. It's enjoyed by many right now recreationally. It has a very large trail system in place. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it. And it's adjacent to our First State National Historic Park, which we fought so hard to get. Beaver Valley runs from about, it's west of 202. It runs from about Mount Lebanon Road all the way up through Pennsylvania. It is rich in historic resources. There are buildings that are still standing and occupied that are older than our country. There have been dozens of rare and endangered species identified within that property. It's about 2,000 acres. And 1,100 of it was sold to the Mount Cuba Foundation by the Woodlawn Trustees for $21 million back in 2011, I think. And that was donated to the National Park Service by the Mount Cuba Foundation. The other approximately 750 acres are slated for development, and that is what we're concerned with. Our major concerns are that in Wilmington, it can affect our drinking water. A large source of our drinking water is the Brandywine River, and this is directly upstream of it. There's major traffic impacts when developing that area. And obviously it impacts our recreation and the adjacency to our national park. It's the same, all the same land, it's all the same contiguous piece of open space, but a lot of it is being gobbled up by developers right now. There's already three development proposals along this land. So as the county moves forward with the land acquisition and land preservation efforts, we ask that we be part of that discussion, especially when talking about this Woodlawn parcel. Thanks.
Thank you. Additional comments from members of the public? Councilman Cardi.
And just to follow on Jason's comments, the watershed of the Brandywine Creek is the drinking water supply for over 100,000 residents in New Castle County. So it's a matter of recreation, quality of the environment, and quality of drinking water for, you know, the greatest concentration of people in Delaware, because the freshwater intakes for the drinking water supply originate from the Brandywine. So I think this matter has, you know, widespread impacts and a widespread concern in northern Delaware.
Thank you. No additional questions from the public, then entertain a
motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor.
All right. Jason, thanks for coming.
I said, let's